in a world where politics is all about the fighting.
I watch a George Will or a Charles Krauthammer, and I watch them for years. They're losers. They're just losers.
Piers, you also have to... Have you fired a weapon?
So that young man should have shot those people.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if someone had...
WCHL cuts through to the heart of the matter. It's time for I'll Grant You That. Reasoned, calm, thoughtful, with your host, Berkeley Grimble.
Good afternoon. Welcome to I'll Grant You That. This is Berkeley Grimble, your host. I'll Grant You That is a show about politics where we get together and talk across the aisle and hopefully come to moments where one or the other person can actually say the words, I'll grant you that. It is an attempt to cross the chasm that separates our body politic. Today we're going to do something a little bit differently. My friend Piers Godwin from the Listen First Project is going to be here, and he's going to be moderating a discussion between myself and Mr. Eric Soderstrom. Take it away, Piers.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me, Berkeley. It's an honor to be here. Listen First Project is a global nonprofit headquartered right here in the Triangle that advocates to facilitate greater understanding, respect, and cooperation by encouraging the timeless but abandoned practice of just listening to each other, especially with those with whom we disagree. Now, we're never going to all agree on everything, and compromise isn't always the answer, but I do hope that we can gain a new respect and appreciation for the other side, bringing civility back to the public discourse. Certainly in this 2016 election year, we've renewed the Listen First, Vote Second campaign, targeting that most salient case of our failure to listen to each other, politics. And today, as Berkeley mentioned, we have the pleasure of having a Listen First conversation on that issue of guns. You know, President Obama has announced new executive orders to increase gun control in the wake of mass shooting tragedies across America. This is an incredibly challenging and contentious issue because we're unable to agree on the nature of the problem, never mind the solution. You've got one side saying the answer is more guns, while the other says the answer is less guns. You know, it's hard for an issue to get more polarized or intractable than that. When you look at the American public, they're very closely divided on gun control. According to a December CNN poll, 51% oppose stricter gun laws and 48% favor such stricter gun laws. You know, I wrote an op-ed earlier this year just attempting to get some facts straight and frame an honest conversation and seek that common ground, that elusive common ground on this issue. You can read that at listenfirstproject.org. But today we've got two gentlemen who do have two different perspectives on the gun issue, yet they've agreed to sit down for a Listen First conversation. Berkeley and Eric, thank you so much for doing this. You all know Berkeley. He's your host of I'll Grant You That, and he supports greater gun control. Whereas Eric Soderstrom is a pro-gun advocate, a leader with Students for Concealed Carry, and a founding board member of Students for Concealed Carry Foundation. I'm just going to get the conversation going, but then we'll have Berkeley and Eric engage each other directly with questions of their own. It promises to be a rich experience for all of us. I'm really looking forward to it and know that you, the listener, will enjoy it as well. What Berkeley and Eric have agreed to do is honor our Listen First conversation guidelines. Listen as you want to be listened to. Fully listen to and consider the other's views before sharing your own. Prioritize respect and understanding. One person speaks at a time. And consistent with Berkeley's essay for Listen First Project called Don't Raise Your Voice, we're going to maintain a calm and respectful tone as well as volume. And finally, they'll ask thoughtful and respectful questions of one another. For the complete Listen First conversation guidelines, head over to listenfirstproject.org. But let's get this conversation going on guns. We'll start by getting just each of your broad positions on the table. Eric, to start with you, what is your stance on gun violence and gun control, and what drives your personal interest in this issue?
Well, I think we have a constitutionally guaranteed individual right to have and keep and bear firearms for self-defense purposes in the United States. That's a position that has been repeatedly upheld in the courts and legal systems. When you look at the data, particularly on the concealed carry issue, which I'm more active on, you see that despite all the dire predictions, concealed carry has expanded and crime rates continue to fall. We haven't seen the spikes that that anti-gun people always predict whenever we're discussing expanding firearm rights in the United States. Constantly hear about how we're going to have these parking lot shootouts and any sort of minor disagreement that is going to turn into this gun battle in whatever venue they happen to be in. And those predictions, just they never come true. And in fact, when you look at the data, if you look at the body of academic research on concealed carry and firearm liberalization laws, you have studies that come down in basically one of two camps. Either it has no effect or it improves and makes the community safer. But we don't have the studies saying that it makes anything any worse. So it's hard for me to justify restricting a right that we have to defend ourselves on when there's not even any evidence that doing so would help anything.
Thanks, Eric. And Berkeley, same question to you. What's your stance on gun violence and gun control, and what's driven your personal interest?
Well, can I ask Eric a question?
Of course.
Will you please use your own words to define for me what does it mean? What is a well-regulated militia?
That is a prefatory clause that is not really relevant to the right that's established.
But the founding fathers wrote it first.
And if they had written that a well-educated populace be necessary to the continued operation of the state, the right of the people to keep and read books shall not be infringed, would that mean that only educated people could keep and read books?
Yeah, I think that's a specious analogy. But so is there any weapon system where would you draw the line? In other words, the problem I have, okay, I understand you want a gun to protect your family and your house. I mean, that's a given. Why does that gun have to be a military-style AR-15 with a huge clip in it? If you hear a noise downstairs, are you going to grab that thing out and just start spraying your house? I mean, why do we have this? I mean, is it just because it's fun to shoot? In that case, why can't I have a bazooka? Frankly, I think it would be fun to have a bazooka and go out in my buddy's field and blow up cars. I mean, would that be okay with you?
Well, I think you'd be surprised at what people actually can own throughout the United States. There's a lot of sort of high-explosive things and incredibly destructive devices that are perfectly legal to own that there isn't really any focus on. With regard to the AR-15 specifically and why it's so popular, it's because it is such an easy system to use. It's a very low recoil weapon. It's a lightweight weapon, particularly with female shooters. It's incredibly popular. It's much easier for a woman in a lot of cases to control and safely use an AR-15 compared to a 12-gauge shotgun that they might not have the body mass or the upper body strength to safely control, in which case that could be a much safer weapon for them to be using.
Safer for what?
For protecting
themselves?
For protecting themselves.
So it's safer to have that than a small handgun?
Absolutely.
It is?
It is. There's a reason that police, they carry rifles in their vehicles, and that's because in a situation where you have to deploy the use of force for self-defense, a rifle is always going to be a better option than a handgun, hands down. There's no question. You can ask any self-defense expert. If you had the option between a pistol and a rifle, the rifle will almost always be better for you. It's much harder to carry one around with you all the time.
Already a lively and enlightening discussion on the gun issue. We're going to take a short break. You're listening to I'll Grant You That. We'll be right back. Welcome back to I'll Grant You That. I'm Pierce Godwin, founder of the Listen First Project, sitting in Berkeley Grimble's host chair today as he engages in a Listen First conversation with Eric Soderstrom on the gun issue. Before we went to break, we were talking about not only gun control, but also the different degrees and types of weapons and their respective efficacy and appropriateness in the hands of citizens. So Berkeley, we heard from Eric. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, yes, Eric, so is there any should the line be drawn anywhere, or should we be allowed to have any weapon system that we want or are capable of owning? I mean, should I be able to buy a tank?
You can buy a tank. That's legal.
You can?
Yes.
Okay.
There are lots of people that own tanks. I don't personally have any interest in owning a tank, but it is legal.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So may not be legal in every jurisdiction,
right,
but there are large numbers of jurisdictions where you could go out and buy an old tank and refurbish it. There's, you know, ranchers that own them and, you know, have fun driving around.
So the stance on your side would be there really isn't a weapon system that you would object to an individual owning, or
well, we've already drawn the line with automatic weapons. You cannot buy an assault rifle legally in the
an automatic
States.
Weapon.
This is one thing that where I think the pro gun and the gun control mm-hmm. movement sort of talk past each other. And assault rifle is a very specific term, and it applies to military weapon systems, and it specifically refers to a select fire type rifle.
What does that mean?
It is capable of either fully automatic mm-hmm. or burst fire modes, where you can pull the trigger once and have more than one shot, fired.
And that is illegal.
And that is illegal. Yeah.
Do you support that?
I think that I have no intention of changing that law. I don't think there's many people on the gun control side that really have any interest in opening up the automatic weapons any more than they are. You can purchase pre-ban fully automatic rifles. They're incredibly expensive. There's a very lengthy process that you have to go through to obtain one of those. And but I think that's been the law since the 30s. You don't see – and in most cases, you don't see long guns being used in crime anyway. The vast majority of gun crimes are committed with handguns, even though we have some high-profile cases like the
mass murders.
The mass shootings, even though a lot of those have used long guns. If you look at the entire body of gun crime, the vast majority of gun crime is committed with handguns.
So why do we have such a higher murder rate? Does it have anything to do with the number of guns? I mean, it seems to me – if there was some modicum of gun control, perhaps then, you know, the 17-year-old teenagers full of testosterone wouldn't be shooting themselves as much. I mean,
a 17-year-old can't legally buy a firearm in the United States.
Well, 18-year-old, okay, yeah. Maybe, well, 19-year-old, whomever. Yeah. I mean, but they do, they get them clearly because we have 300 million guns, so it's pretty easy to find them.
We do have a lot of firearms, and there are issues with gun theft, but I don't think the regulations that we're talking about passing are not going to stop the criminal supply of firearms. The regulations that are they're being pushed for in the name of reducing gun violence, in almost every case, they simply put additional burdens onto lawful gun owners.
What's wrong with background checks?
We've got very extensive background
except
checks.
Except not the gun shows.
That's not accurate.
Isn't that right?
It's largely not accurate. We're in the state of North Carolina right now. Mm-hmm. There's only one transaction that can be legally carried out without a background check, and that is the sale of a long gun. So not a handgun. Only applies to long guns. You can sell a long gun from one North Carolina resident, private owner of that firearm, to another North Carolina resident, private owner. Most of the guns sold at gun shows are sold by firearm corporation. They're sold by your Bud's Gun Shop and mm-hmm. all these other gun stores that come together at the gun shows, and they put on a very big variety of different firearms that are available. But all of those sales are still subject to all the same federal regulations and background check procedures that you would have to go through if you went to that store and bought it in the store.
I think I'd be totally for everybody carrying a gun if I knew everybody was sober, rational, and sane. But most people are at some point in their lives none of the above, and so I think that's why I am fearful of a hyper armed population, because I think more and more people will be shooting each other when perhaps they would have only have been in fist fights.
Yeah,
right.
So when you look at concealed carry, we already have a very well armed populace. It's just that you don't see it because they're carrying concealed. Anywhere from 1 in 40 to 1 in 100 people out in the public is carrying a firearm on their person, and we don't have the daily shootouts that get predicted. So I understand there's a fear of this potential thing that could happen, but it just doesn't happen. In a lot of cases, a firearm can be a mediating a presence. In many cases where a firearm is used in self-defense, no shot is fired. The mere presence of the firearm will cause. I mean, a lot of criminals are cowards. They don't want to get in a fight.
Right.
They don't want to get, they don't want to get hurt either. And in many cases, where you have that criminal confrontation, the mere presence of the firearm drives them off, and stymies what could be mm-hmm. a violent altercation.
For instance, but I own a jewelry store, right? Highly potential to be robbed. Nothing in any literature I've ever read said you should either have a firearm or use a firearm when you're being, robbed by somebody, armed robbery, I mean, and so I see, why? I'm going to pull out a gun and shoot somebody to, protect something, and people do it. I mean, there's people who think, oh, yeah, I just, this guy came in and I shot him. Well, okay, perhaps, he was super well-trained, but I think, a lot of people have firearms that aren't really well-trained. I think training is a big issue here.
So when you get your concealed carry permit in North Carolina, you do have to go through many hours of education on the laws in the state, and you do have to pass a firearm competency test. You've got to be able to hit a target. But a lot of people, they have this idea of, this sort of mythical OK Corral vision that we all have. And the reality is I think the OK Corral lasts less than 30 seconds.
Right.
Most shootings, we're not talking about something where you have to be an expert marksman. The majority of shootings in self-defense, the majority of self-defense shootings, I believe, occur like something like 95% of them are less than 15 feet. So you don't have to be this crack shot marksman. I do think that if you choose to own a firearm and carry a firearm, then you need to take it upon yourself to make sure that you're doing things where you're practicing and keeping yourself proficient. That's why I'm a member of IDPA. It's a great program that puts you into scenarios where you're practicing, you know, sort of what could be an actual defense scenario rather than just shooting at a paper target. Mm-hmm.
Terrific Listen First conversation. We're going to take one more short break and be right back with Berkley and Eric. You're listening to I'll Grant You That. Welcome back to I'll Grant You That. I'm Pierce Godwin, founder of Listen First Project, hosting a Listen First conversation today between I'll Grant You That host Berkley Grimball and Eric Soderstrom, a pro-gun activist. Yeah, I feel like one of the fundamental issues we have around this issue is that for many people, our right to bear arms is a constitutional tenet of the American character and history, you know, correlating with individual liberty, independence, and self-protection. But at the same time, as Berkley has alluded to, there are other truths that are self-evident. With the highest rate of gun ownership among developed countries, 89 guns per 100 people, double that of second place Switzerland, the United States does have by far the highest rate of gun murders, 4 times second place Switzerland. So, you know, it doesn't take an expert to recognize that more guns does result in more gun deaths, but you have the constitutional tenet and the points that Eric has made around the safety that can be garnered from more guns on the street as well. I know, Berkley, that you would take exception with the premise and what actually is in the Constitution. That's such a fundamental issue undergirding this debate. So how would you all react to those two things that we try to hold but are held in such tension?
Can I digress?
Yeah.
One thing. It seems to me the NRA has become a marketing arm for the gun industry. I mean, every time there's a mass shooting, the gun industry makes more money. And I think the NRA is part of the polarization industrial complex, which is what the editorial, which I spoke about in a show a few weeks ago, where We're trying to promote fear in people to basically make money. I mean, that's how I would look at the NRA today. The NRA was there was a time when the Black Panthers were carrying guns. The NRA was for gun control. And the other thing is why is the gun NRA and the gun lobby against the technology of making a gun so that only one person can shoot it?
You want me to take the first one or the second one?
Your choice.
I think. First off, I would say the NRA exists for its members, of which I am not one, but it is acting on their behalf, and they are a very aggressive organization when it comes to defending Second Amendment rights. But I think you also have to look, they've had an excellent success record. Their aggressive stance has helped them stave off laws that they don't like, and so they've been loud but effective at accomplishing their goals. With regards to firearm sales after shooting incidents, if you want to stop that spike, then the next time there's a mass shooting, let's not have every gun control advocate on Capitol Hill coming out to do a press conference about how they're going to reintroduce a ban, like, for instance, the assault weapons ban that lapsed that multiple studies showed had no effect on crime. But every time there's an incident, we have a train of people coming out to talk about how they're going to push all these restrictions on what sort of firearms you can buy. And when you tell people, oh, you might not be able to buy this next year, you're going to have a spike in people going out to get it before the ban, before it be grandfathered in. So I think sort of both sides could probably take some more time after an incident. With regards to the technology for individuals to be able to have, say, a fingerprint sensor or mm-hmm. a handprint sensor or the bracelet versions, it's an incredibly unreliable technology. It makes the firearm much less dependable and safe for the person using it for their own self-defense. It's just an unreliable technology. It's been tested. And then you also have the one of the other concerns that comes up is a New Jersey law where if that firearm were to be to come available, then they would ban every other firearm within the state of New Jersey. So yeah, if you want to see that technology come to market, one of the first things you could do is repeal that New Jersey statute. It still wouldn't sell.
I see what you're saying, right. Mm-hmm.
It's a firearm that's not comparable with the standard choices right. for self-defense. It's unreliable, and it ends up being about 3 times as expensive as a conventional firearm.
Thank you so much, guys.
Most interesting.
Yeah, unfortunately out of time today. But if you believe in what we're talking about, and I'll grant you that, and Listen First Project, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter for real-time commentary. Find a lot more on listenfirstproject.org, including Listen First essays by Berkeley and many others. Thank you so much for listening to this Listen First conversation today on I'll Grant You That.